Psalm 74 in the New King James Bible, a contemplation of Asaph. O God, why have you cast us off forever? Why does your anger smoke against the sheep of your pasture? Remember your congregation, which you have purchased of old, the tribe of your inheritance, which you have redeemed, this Mount Zion where you have dwelt. Lift up your feet to the perpetual desolations. The enemy has damaged everything in the sanctuary. Your enemies roar in the midst of your meeting place. They set up their banners for signs. They seem like men who lift up axes among the thick trees, and now they break down its carved work all at once with axes and hammers. They have set fire to your sanctuary. They have defiled the dwelling place of your name to the ground. They said in their hearts, "Let us destroy them altogether." They have burned up all the meeting places of God in the land. Excuse me. We do not see our signs. There is no longer any prophet, nor is there any among us who knows how long. O God, how long will the adversary reproach? Will the enemy blaspheme your name forever? Why do you withdraw your hand, even your right hand? Take it out of your bosom and destroy them. For God is my King from of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. You divided the sea by your strength. You broke the heads of the sea serpents in the waters. You broke the heads of Leviathan in pieces and gave him as food to the people inhabiting the wilderness. You broke open the fountain and the flood. You dried up mighty rivers. The day is yours. The night is also is yours. You have prepared the light and the sun. You have set all the borders of the earth. You have made summer and winter. Remember this, that the enemy has reproached, O Lord, and that a foolish people has blasphemed your name. Oh, do not deliver the life of your turtle dove to the wild beast. Do not forget the life of your poor forever. Have respect to the covenant, for the dark places of the earth are full of the haunts of cruelty. Oh, do not let the oppressed return ashamed. Let the poor and needy praise your name. Arise, O God, plead your own cause. Remember how the foolish man reproaches you daily. Do not forget the voice of your enemies. The tumult of those who rise up against you increases continually. Okay, this contemplation of Asaph is often understood, taken in isolation. And, well, it's one that we've heard interpretations of, preaching of in the past. If you have any familiarity with Psalms, this is one of them that you've heard before. I want to suggest, or actually flat tell you, that taking this in isolation, looking at it as a totally separate work apart from anything else, is simply not how God wrote it. And it's not how it's to be presented. I'm going to give you a couple different ways, actually three different things to look at it, and that is not exhaustive at all, but three other contexts in which to place this psalm. To see it as a psalm of Jesus, the Christ, the Messiah. To see it in the arc of redemptive history, rather than just as a cry for help at an isolated time. Now, the way it's usually understood, and I'm sure that was the original context of it, was during the destruction of the temple by the Babylonians when they came in there. We see reference to, in verse 5, they seem like men who lift up axes among the thick trees, and now they break down its carved work all at once with axes and hammers. They have set fire to your sanctuary. They have defiled the dwelling place of your name to the ground. And when we see this, and in that context, it is a bitter, sad psalm. It's one where you see no resolution. You see the psalmist crying out for help. And we'll see this some in the sermon. Phil's going to allude to it, I would assume, by seeing what he's done with the service so far. That the one who would restore Jerusalem and the nation is not just the ones who would come back and rebuild the wall and the temple, but Jesus, the Messiah, the one who dwells in the temple, in the Holy of Holies, comes back to restore it. But even that's only a picture. It did happen back then in those days, but it was a picture of Jesus coming, and we saw that in the last several weeks looking through the Isaiah, of him coming to restore not just the temple, not just Jerusalem, and not just the nation of Israel, but restoring all those nations also that are lost, and the covenant applied not just in the land, but across the earth. So in that context, the context of Isaiah, we see Jesus then in this psalm being called upon to come in the time of trouble. And I said there's no resolution and very little hope in this psalm. But really, that wasn't speaking the truth. If you look in verse 20, have respect to the covenant, for the dark places of the earth are full of the haunts of cruelty. You see that calling upon the covenant in God's name has always had good results. And the psalmist then, in the last two verses, has confidence to say, "Arise, O God, and plead your own cause. Remember how the foolish one reproaches you daily. Do not forget the voice of your enemies. The tumult of those who rise up against you increases continually." Looking forward to God, saying, "Remember the covenant and the promises you made your people, and remember how you hold your name, and it's being blasphemed by the unbeliever." And that's a good context to look at this in. But I'm going to change a little bit more. In the context of the Psalms that we've been looking at, remember up until the break, at the finishing of the other book, we see Jesus through the Psalms as the sacrificial lamb, as the Messiah, the one who was crushed for our sin, and whose resurrection showed that the covenant was indeed enforced and was effectual, and that our salvation was purchased. And as we switched in Psalm 73, and as we'll see going through this series, we see him being set up not just as the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, which he was, but as the kinsman redeemer and as the avenger of blood for his people. Those are concepts from the Old Testament that are considered pre-Christian and just not good enough for us. And that's foolishness, because those two are certainly aspects of his character, prefigured in the Old Testament by the offices of the kinsman redeemer, the Goel, and the avenger of blood. But here we see, after his crucifixion, after he was taken up to heaven, the dark days that fell upon the church. If you read your history of Josephus and leading up to that, it was a horrible time. In the New Testament, you see the trials and the tribulations, and I'll be so bold as to say the great tribulation that fell upon the people. And it ended in the destruction of Jerusalem when those who persecuted the church, the false Jews, and their friends, the Romans, were destroyed. The other context I want to tell you to read this, see this psalm in, is one that is missed a lot. And that is looking at the book of Revelation, the Apocalypse of St. John. And you've heard me say over and over, you can't understand the Old Testament without the New completely, but you certainly can't understand the New Testament if you don't know your Old. And the Apocalypse, the Revelation of John, the vision on the island of Patmos, is particularly an area of the New Testament. You have to understand the imagery of the Old. You have to understand the destruction, the promised vengeance, the salvation by the strong arm of God coming and driving out the unbeliever and restoring the people, to understand that book properly. The arc of no prophet, no people, they're lost in the book of Revelation. You have the picture of the martyrs around the throne in heaven crying out, "How long, O Lord?" And he says, "When I'm ready, I will avenge." And again, here we have the picture of that kinsman redeemer and the avenger of blood. When Jesus rides out on his white horse and takes the bow down from the sky to work the vengeance of God upon the unbelievers in the earth, should make you think of this psalm. We have Jesus who has risen to the right hand of the Father, and things kind of held confused there for years. You hear about that time when the old and the new kind of coexisted, when things weren't really set up until the destruction of Jerusalem. And then Jesus rode forth from the sanctuary to assert his kingship over the nations and to get vengeance upon those who had oppressed his people, killed his people. And this psalm speaks of that story very well as well. Now, if you know your book of Revelation, if you understand the Jewish wars, if you understand the desolation and the time between the crucifixion and the destruction of the temple in 70 AD, listen to this again. "O God, why have you cast us off forever?" And it sure seemed like it. "The sheep of your pasturage, God's anger was raised against them." The sanctuary was destroyed. And you think about the Romans marching in and setting up their banners and burning the holy city and making sacrifice of the temple. The enemy has damaged everything in the sanctuary. Your enemies roar in the midst of your meeting place. They set up their banners for signs. They act like men who lift up axes among the thick trees. They break down its carved wood with axes and hammers. They have set fire to your sanctuary. They have defiled the dwelling place of your name to the ground. They said in their hearts, let us destroy them all together. And they have burned up all the meeting places of God in the land. Now, just a little bit here, guys. When you see the meeting places of God in the land, don't think of the Bama, the high places that were set up in violation of God's law. What's being referred to here is the synagogues, the proper meeting places throughout the land for God's people. And the people are lost. They have no prophet. They have no signs. All the miracles of the age when Jesus was on the earth are gone. And you see in the New Testament, when they speak of these times when the people are lost and they go to after false prophets. Oh God, how long will the adversary reproach? Will the enemy blaspheme your name forever? And then we see the history part. For God is my king from of old, working salvation in the midst of the earth. And the history of his redemptive salvation throughout the years, getting across the river, going into the land, driving out the Canaanites, making them safe and settling them in the land. Then remember this, that the enemy has reproached Jehovah and that a foolish people has blasphemed your name. They would not have that man rule over them. Do not deliver the life of your turtle dove to the wild beast. That line's almost problematic, but you remember that the turtle dove was the sacrifice for a new child to re-enter to join the covenant community. And there were two of them taken in. And some of the things that I've read show that this was joining with Christ there in the sanctuary. You had two turtle doves, one for the baby and one looking at the Redeemer who allowed him to come into the covenant community. Do not forget the life of your poor. Have respect to the covenant. And again, this cry to the covenant to avenge your people, redeem your people, save your people, avenge the blasphemy against your name. And we see rising up the Redeemer, the Lord of Lords, the King of Kings, redeeming his people and putting down those who would rail against God and fight against his people, some by salvation, some through conversion, and some by death. Now, in the next psalm, we'll kind of close the story out. Again, I said this doesn't end on a happy note. It ends on a moderately hopeful note. But in the next psalm, we finish it up. The next psalm is about Jesus and how he dealt with those who were harming his people. And how he redeemed his people. As we go to read or sing this, think about what we've been hearing in Isaiah. Think about what we know of the book of Revelation, of the arc of history. How God's mercy, God's salvation broke forth from the land. They thought they ended the threat when they nailed him up on that cross. But instead, through his resurrection, the gospel is broken free. God's Redeemer did not just save Israel. If they did, there'd be one person in this room. But by breaking out to the nations and bringing the nations under grace, under gospel, then all the world has become the land. And all the peoples have become the covenant people of God. And in that we rejoice. And looking forward to that, we're looking back to it happening, but forward to the rest of the story next week.